Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for listening to this highlight from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, remember, to hear the entire broadcast or more highlights from our recent episodes, you can go to the Austin Hill in the Morning program page on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening. Good morning. It's now 35 minutes past the hour. From the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill. Honored to have you with us, and thank you for being a supporter, if you are. We can't do it without you. Join us at any time at myfaithradio.com. If you believe the information, the perspective, the conversation that we offer here on this program is significant, join our support team now. No gift is too small. MyFaithRadio.com. We're told that we are days away, actually just a few weeks away, from the United States Congress making a big decision whether or not to support President Barack Obama's plan to offer nuclear capacities to the nation of Iran. This is a country that has been recognized as officially as an enemy of the state, an enemy of our country, since 1979. Back when I was in junior high school, President Jimmy Carter and his administration said Iran is troublesome. They are harboring terrorists. They sponsor terrorism. Our nation should have no diplomatic ties with this country, and we need to box them in, contain them, and protect ourselves and protect Israel from them. Every president since Jimmy Carter has followed that wisdom. That would include President Reagan, President Bush, President Clinton, and President Bush number two. But that all changed with President Barack Obama. Now, despite an international outcry of "don't do this," the president and our Secretary of State, John Kerry, has insisted we need to have diplomatic relations with that nation, and they need their own nuclear weaponry. Even as the negotiations have been going on, Iran's religious leader, the Ayatollah, has been saying they will use those weapons to destroy Israel and destroy as much of America as possible. Speaking of Israel, let's wind the clock back. This was from April of this year. The Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, spoke before the United States Congress, and he offered a bit of a warning to the United States of America, making this very important observation. Listen to this again.
America's founding document promises life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Iran's founding document pledges death, tyranny, and the pursuit of jihad.
It's what their founding documents say. And again, as I pointed out, the leaders of Iran have been pledging to take the power that will be granted them with President Obama's arrangements and use it against us. I never thought I'd see this day happen in my country, where my government would be openly negotiating with a regime that wants to destroy us. Be that as it may, Dr. David Aikman is an historian, a best-selling author, a professor of history at Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia. He joins us on our news line to talk a little bit about this and to offer some insight. Dr. Aikman, welcome back to the program. Good morning.
Thank you so much, Austin.
Where do we stand right now, our nation and the country of Iran, and what's at stake?
Well, what is at stake is potentially the physical survival of one of our most important allies in the Middle East, namely the State of Israel. And what is also at stake is the credibility of American pledge of support to its allies. On the other hand, proponents of the deal with Iran say, look, this is the best chance we have to sort of help Iran to move down the slipway into normal diplomatic relations with the rest of the world. So we can't change them, but we can at least defang their nuclear machine. That is the best argument of the administration.
It begs the question, is it necessarily a good and moral and virtuous thing for Iran to have diplomatic relations with the rest of the world? Or maybe to ask the question in a different way, are there some nations that just are not worthy of diplomatic relations with the rest of the world? I would answer yes to the latter question, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think, Winston Churchill said that the establishment of diplomatic relations is to secure a convenience, not to confer a compliment. And that has been the regular principle of American diplomacy ever since Nixon's China breakthrough in 1971. A lot of people held their noses at that because The Republic of China had been America's ally during World War II, had been loyal during the Korean War, etc., and the Chinese communists were still breathing fire and brimstone mm-hmm. in their propaganda against the United States. The difference is that in 1971 and 72, the Chinese were realistic. They understood that they faced a greater global threat from the Soviet Union than the United States. And they reckoned that the connection with America would enable them to stand up to any Soviet threats. So they were quite rational and reasonable, as of course the Soviets were in negotiating with us over SALT and other nuclear issues. Never at any point did they say, death to America, or we want to destroy the United States, let alone we want to destroy one of their most important allies. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with a question of judgment here. Do you think the stated intentions of the leaders of Iran, which have been repeated many times, are merely a propaganda pastiche set up to terrify us and to get more influence? Or do you think they are actually real? If they hold a gun to your head and say, if you don't do this, I'll shoot, they will actually shoot. That is the question. It's a very important question we have to determine over the Iran deal.
Dr. David Aikman is an historian, a professor of history at Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia. He's written on this very subject that we're discussing right now, a book called The Mirage of Peace, Understanding the Never-Ending Conflict in the Middle East. To that point, Dr. Aikman, we know that the Middle East is a key region of the world as it pertains to the history of Christianity, the history of the church. We know, regardless of what your interpretation of biblical prophecy may hold, chances are you're going to be very focused on the Middle East, whatever interpretation you hold to. This is a very strategic region of the world. What do these ongoing discussions and negotiations with Iran amount to in the broader scheme of things, would you say, even as people look towards the return of Christ someday and biblically prophetic events?
Well, I've never claimed to be a sort of established analyst of end time events. Who is going to be on what side, who the enemy from the north is, what the Russians are going to do, etc. I cannot possibly predict that.
And but I don't put a lot of stock in anybody's predictions with those things, to be quite honest. But you bring a perspective that a lot of people don't have. But go ahead.
Well, I think what we're facing is an Iran that is the spearhead of an aggressive, virulently hate-filled Islamist thrust at the civilization of the West and indeed of the rest of the world. And when they say death to America, they don't just mean we don't want the United States to be a great power. We mean everything that America stands for, all the values that have helped defeat Japanese militarism and German Nazism in World War II. All those values go out of the window. So they're basically aiming at the sort of mainstream civilization of most of the world. I don't think most of the world actually understands this.
Dr. David Aikman, historian, history professor, best-selling author. He's on our newsline here on the Faith Radio Network. When the authorities, and there are many of them, but when authorities within the government of Iran, and even, yeah, we saw this, I think you and I talked about this last time you were on the program, we saw video online of members of the Iranian parliament, literally, I mean, it'd be like members of our Congress breaking out in a chant, death to Iran. But we don't do that here in the U.S. The parliament in Iran, nonetheless, chanted death to America. They're in their nation's capital, in Tehran. When they say death to America, what does that mean for Christianity and for the church?
Well, I think Christianity is under tremendous pressure in Iran. The Christian church, the house church in Iran, has been growing by leaps and bounds and almost dwarfs the growth of the Christian church in China. It's a fantastic grassroots movement of leading people to Christ. And they have deployed all the repressive powers of the state to try to stop this and to roll up the movement. So if you are an Iranian Christian, you are at great risk simply by being a believer in Jesus. But the greater danger of Iran is that Iran is projecting its own political aspirations throughout the entire Middle East. They've got their supporting troops that are battling the established government of Yemen. They're threatening Saudi Arabia. They have key links, of course, in the Syrian regime. They have a foot in the door of Lebanon with Hezbollah. They are major players on the international scene in a very negative way in the entire Middle East.
All right, we'll continue in just moments with Dr. David Aikman. He is an historian. Interestingly enough, he's written on this issue of the church and Christianity in a very tumultuous world. His book entitled One Nation Without God, The Battle for Christianity in an Age of Unbelief. What is the faith? What is our faith? What does Christianity suggest to us would be the right thing to do in the face of this quote-unquote negotiation between the U.S. and Iran? We'll talk more in just moments. 46 minutes past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're here. It's 47 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. What does it mean when our nation's government is seeking to arm the nation of Iran? Dr. David Aikman, historian and author of the book One Nation Without God, The Battle for Christianity in an Age of Unbelief. He's on our newsline. Dr. Aikman, if indeed the United States and Iran enter into this agreement, it's very artfully not called a treaty because that would set a very high benchmark of approval in the Congress to get approval for it. But it's not called a treaty. It is tantamount to a treaty, though. If the United States enters into this with Iran, does that make the cause of the church in the Middle East more dangerous and more difficult in your estimation?
I don't think the U.S. Implementing the agreement would necessarily affect the church. I don't think the Iranian policy towards Christians is influenced one way or another by what it does with the United States on nuclear issues. But I think it sends a signal that the United States may not be as prepared to stand up for principles that Iranian Christians certainly believe in as forcefully as the Iranian Christians hoped would be the case. People notice what the United States does, and they interpret signals in different ways according to their own particular pressures.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of which, you and I talked about this here on the program, and I think we spoke about this personally. But earlier this year, there was a particular evangelical pastor. His name was Warwick Marsh from the Nation of Australia. And he got a lot of attention here in the U.S. and around the world by posting a series of videos calling on Christians in Australia and New Zealand and elsewhere to pray for America, to pray for revival of America. And a lot of people here stateside that I talked to are a little surprised that they necessarily would pray in Australia for revival here as opposed to revival in the Middle East or maybe stopping the Islamic State or an end to terrorism or what have you. And I did see some commentaries from pastors and Christian thinkers here in the U.S. saying, well, you know, in Australia, they see how abortion happens here in the U.S. They see our government sanctioning homosexual marriage. They see our nation becoming very immoral. That may be the case, but I wonder, could it be that Christian leaders, even pastors in other parts of the world, are seeing the United States undermining Israel, embracing Iran, doing all kinds of, not owning up to our diplomatic agreements like with the nation of Ukraine and whatnot. They see our foreign policy playing out, and they're down under or wherever saying, oh my goodness, what happened to the good guys in the world, the United States of America? I mean, is this foreign policy stuff something that unnerves Christians, do you think, in other parts of the world?
I'm absolutely sure it does, and not only foreign policy, but the moral fiber of the United States, which foreign Christians have almost universally acknowledged has declined in the last few years, partly because of some of the decisions of the Obama administration. But let's face it, America is the lead nation in the world. It was the country that the world relied upon to defeat the Japanese and the Germans in World War II, that they relied upon to keep as much as possible of the world safe for democracy when the Cold War was on. The Americans have been the guys up at bat. And the idea that the American team might not be ready to go to bat for the rest of the world is really scary. And that is a judgment that Christians make of the moral fiber of the leadership of the American nation, starting primarily with its government, but also extending through its media and cultural expressions. People are very concerned about the moral status of the United States, and I think they have a right to be concerned.
What would you say to the parishioner in the pew or the pastor in the pulpit about these issues of the direction of our country, how we impact the rest of the world, our foreign policy, our domestic policy, all of it? What would you say about that?
I would say the United States, or at least America, has to get back to its roots as a community of Christian believers who wanted to spread the gospel message to everybody in the world and who wanted their nation to be a city on the hill. The original Puritan premise of the settlers in Massachusetts was to have a really upright society. Now, we know that Puritans made all kinds of mistakes. They were intolerant of people who differed slightly on theology. Of course, there were the witch trials. But by and large, the Puritan society in America was the best educated, most enlightened, and best governed period of American history. And we should strive to get back to some of the virtues of the Puritan period.
Well stated, as always, Dr. David Aikman, historian and author of the book One Nation Without God, The Battle for Christianity in an Age of Unbelief. Dr. Aikman, as always, thanks for your analysis. We look forward to talking again, and we hope and pray for a brighter day.
Thank you so much, Austin.
Good to be with you. It's 54 minutes past the hour. Monday underway. It's the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Well, thanks again for listening to this highlight from Austin Hill in the Morning. Remember, for more information about this, visit the Austin Hill in the Morning program page on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com.